Hey team, welcome to the Professionally Offensive Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Cabrera. This is the spot where we provide raw, unfiltered insights from some amazing guests. Stand by, you're about to be offended in all the right ways. All right, team, welcome back to the show. We are continuing our Art of War series. This is part four. We're going to be having one more part after this, and that'll take us through the full series, so five parts in total. If you haven't listened to part one, two, and three, really recommend that you do so. Again, not just great for warfare and the military aspects of it, but I really do think the Art of War dives into a lot of things that applies in business, whatever you might be pursuing as a professional, and also just your personal life. Just a really simple, poetic, and direct way to think about some of the fundamentals that we often miss. On this episode, we're going to focus on three chapters, really. First one's called The Fray. Then we're going to go into the next chapter, which is On the March. And then we're going to round it out with Forms of Terrain. Now, just by reading those to you, you might think this is more of a geography type episode, but really it isn't. I think that more than anything else, we're going to be focused on the excerpts from these different chapters that are really focused on character. Character of leadership, character of people, and what it really means to reflect and dig deep on how one makes decisions and then how that gets into practice with that preparation that happens as you move through battle, as you move through life. All right, we're going to kick off here with the first chapter of this part, The Fray. Now, this only has a couple of excerpts we're going through, but I think you'll find them to be refreshing and to the point. The soldier's spirit is keenest in the morning. By noon, it has dulled. He confronts chaos with discipline. He treats tumult with calm. This is mastery of the mind. These are axioms of the art of war. Do not advance uphill. Do not oppose an enemy with his back to a hill. Do not pursue an enemy feigning flight. Do not attack keen troops. Do not swallow a bait. Do not thwart a returning army. Leave a passage for the besieged army. Do not press an enemy at bay. This is the art of war. This chapter really just boils down a lot of what the whole book's about. The beginning part here, talking about the spirit is keenest in the morning, and it has dulled. If you're not really paying attention to that part of the chapter, you might just go, well, that's obvious. Well, if it's so obvious, it's something that us as humans, us as business operators, us as entrepreneurs and just folks who live in our lives, family members, we just forget that when the energy is highest, that's when we should really execute on things. And the human nature in us is that we grow tired, right? Whether that might be a literal meaning of this part of the chapter, which is, hey, sometimes you just got to get things done in the morning because things are going to happen in the afternoon that you're going to have no energy for, so prioritize accordingly. Or on the other side of it, you might have to do more long-term, right? If you are engaged in running a business, if you're engaged in running an organization, prioritize getting a lot of good work done here in the first couple years, because by the time you might be, if you're fortunate or maybe unfortunate enough, to be in a business for a few decades, just recognize there will be a wearing of your spirit and of your soul as you try to move things along. Discipline is the best thing to confront chaos. Often when things are messy and moving around, it is really that simple foundational discipline, right? That commitment to yourself. That's kind of how I think about discipline. What are the commitments that you are making to yourself to execute the fundamentals despite the circumstance that's going to carry you through the day? And so discipline here in chaos is really the way to keep you calm. It's truly the mastering of the mind. And then the last section here, just about what do you do with an army? What do you do with an enemy that's running, or, you know, that do you pursue or don't you pursue? When do you do attack? This is just a reminder of the book that this isn't just about burning everything you see and attacking it with full force. Sometimes the essence of good warfare, the essence of good execution, the essence of good life is knowing when to not do something. We're moving on to our next chapter here. On the march. If he is on easy ground, he is luring us. Humble words coupled with increased preparations are a sign of impending attack. Strong words coupled with an aggressive advance are a sign of impending retreat. Words of peace but no treaty are a sign of a plot. Bears of water drinking first indicate great thirst. Shouting at night is a sign of fear. Confusion among troops is a sign that the general is not respected. Excessive rewards are a sign of desperation. Excessive punishment are a sign of exhaustion. If a general is by turns tyrannical and in terror of his own men, it is a sign of supreme incompetence. It is a question of not attacking too aggressively. Concentrate your strength, assess your enemy, and win the confidence of your men. That is enough. Consistent and effective orders inspire obedience. Inconsistent and ineffective orders provoke disobedience. When orders are consistent and effective, general and troops enjoy mutual trust. Let's go to the beginning. On the march. The part that I really enjoy about this chapter here is it's almost as if Sun Tzu is just like writing literal observations, right? It's like if I wrote this chapter in the current setting that I'm at, I'd almost go, leaves are blowing. Must mean there's wind. The ground is wet. Must mean there was rain. It seems so obvious, right? There's just something about it that just seems like I don't understand what the wisdom is here. But I think the wisdom, quite literally, you know, when they go, if he is on easy ground, he's luring us. Humble words coupled with increased preparations are a sign of impending attack. There's this human nature in us, right? There's this instincts we have, this intuition we have when we're conversing with somebody, right? We just don't quite feel like it's all there. How many times have y'all executed a deal, whether it's a simple bargain or buying a vehicle or a major merger and acquisition, whatever it might be, and this happens. Words of peace, but no treaty, are a sign of a plot. Bears of water drinking first indicate great thirst. Just those two statements alone can apply to business, right? When you think about it, you're going through this deal process and everything, and you're having all these great verbal agreements, but there isn't anything on writing. There's no treaty. There's no writing there. Well, guess what? That means something else might be happening. Either they're not telling you the full truth or something else is going on. Or you're doing your due diligence, right? And this line, bearers of water drinking first indicate great thirst. You start going through the different departments in the company. You start checking out the different teams and you wonder, huh, people really do not seem comfortable here, right? The folks quite literally giving me the financial diligence papers are already kind of drinking the water, if you will. They are already preempting me with what the numbers are or might or may not look like. Well, that's odd, right? Is something else going on here? Are things not as they seem? But we as humans want to convince ourselves sometimes that this is already okay. I don't want to go through this work again. I have gone this far. I just don't want to see what I don't want to see. When the facts are right in front of us, it's just up to us to acknowledge those truths. It goes on to then talk about shouting at night and really just kind of good order and discipline and respect. One of the things that stick out to me in this chapter is the part where it talks about excessive rewards are a sign of desperation and excessive punishments are a sign of exhaustion. Neither one of those things are good. Again, everything in balance. Reward your people, right? And make sure that you have moments where you have to have consequences for bad behavior, consequences for failed objectives. But it has to be in balance because you tip it either way and it's going to cause issues. It is a question of not attacking too aggressively. Concentrate your strength, assess your enemy, and win the confidence of your men. That is enough. This reminds me so much of businesses, operators, entrepreneurs that I see that the first go-to thing to get their business to be successful is to go raise money. Is that the answer? Or maybe look at the resources you currently have. Maybe fight smaller. Maybe if your team isn't as big as you think it needs to be, focus on the teammates you already do have. Can you extract the best out of them? And most importantly, have you earned their trust? Because if you have, you'll see one person operate as if they were three, right? These are the things that often we can miss because we think that what society is telling us about what it takes to grow a big business, grow a big organization, hit the mountaintop, and whatever that looks like, has to be by surrounding yourself with an abundance of maybe unnecessary resource. When the reality of it is, if you can just concentrate, earn the trust of your people, that's simply enough. And then finally, really talking about inspiring obedience. It's really about being consistent and having effective orders. This just goes back to simple fundamentals of good leadership, right? And that's leadership at work, that's leadership in your family, and that's leadership in your own personal life. How are you leading yourself? Are you being consistent? Are you being disciplined? Are you being effective, right? Are those things actually landing? Do they actually mean something when you put it into motion? And if they do, well, just so happens to create obedience. And when you have obedience, you can take on the world because everybody agrees and feels this is the way to go. Last chapter, forms of terrain. When troops are strong, but officers weak, the result is impotence. When officers are strong, but troops are weak, the result is decay. When the superior officers are angry and insubordinate and charge into battle out of resentment before their general can judge the likelihood of victory, then the outcome is collapse. Assessment of the enemy and mastery of victory, calculating the difficulty, the danger, and the distance of the terrain, these constitute the way of the superior general. If an engagement is sure to bring victory, and yet the ruler forbids it, fight. If an engagement is sure to bring defeat, and yet the ruler orders it, do not fight. He who advances without seeking fame, who retreats without escaping blame, he whose one aim is to protect his people and serve his Lord, this man is a jewel of the realm. If he is generous but cannot command, if he is affectionate but cannot give orders, if he is chaotic and cannot keep order, then his men will be like spoiled children and useless. If we know that our own troops are capable of attacking but fail to see that the enemy is not vulnerable, we have only half of the victory. The wise warrior, when he moves, is never confused. When he acts, is never at a loss. So it is said, know the enemy, know yourself, and victory is never in doubt, not in 100 battles. No heaven, no earth, and your victory is complete. Going to the first excerpt here, talking about when troops are strong but officers are weak, the result is impotence. When officers are strong but troops are weak, the result is decay. Both have to be strong, right? Both have to create this level of trust and harmony as you're thinking about operating in a way that's going to produce any kind of fruit. It is not uncommon to put a leader in charge that's really great of a crew or a team that's not so great and just think, hey, this is going to fix itself. And vice versa. You got some really good teammates and you're going to put a really bad leader, bad manager, bad person in charge, not a very competent one in charge, and think that it's going to buff out. You want to see the morale go down pretty quick. Just watch those two things work. You really need to invest in both sides. right? And it's true, it is the leader's responsibility to develop their team, but strong baselines shouldn't be misunderstood. As we move along here in the chapter, the other part that is quite interesting because it seems too simple, right? What does it take to be a superior general? I'll tell you, it's nothing fancy. It's really just mastering the way you calculate the difficulties of things. What's the danger? What's the distance? How's the terrain look? It's all the fundamentals, right? The very best leaders master the fundamentals, which allows us to find confidence in that. Those that are often too fancy about the way they execute are usually the ones later on that we kind of poke at because they kind of came across just too big-headed about things. Whereas it's always the quiet, humble one that studies and that understands what the simplicity of a great execution plan needs to look like and then moves with aggression to execute are usually the ones that are brought up to the front and that are commended by all those involved. There's a part in here where it probably seems a bit insubordinate, right? If an engagement is sure to bring victory and yet the ruler forbids it, fight. If the engagement is sure to bring defeat and yet the ruler orders it, do not fight. I think there's a lot of different ways that this can go. I'm going to take this back to business for a second. There are often times that we are confronted with what investors, a board, or even outside competitors' influence might tell us we need to do. Hey, this is what needs to happen. But you live in the trenches every day. You lead your team in the trenches every day, and you see that that's not going to work. If you continue forward with that, really you are as big part of the blame as anything else, and vice versa. Right? If you know there is a sure way to win, but you're being told to do something else, you are also part of that not going well. You have to take accountability for that. You can't be pointing fingers. You also have to be prepared to die on your sword. You also have to be prepared to get hit in the face. I think too many leaders out there in business are not willing to sacrifice their very job to do the right thing. And I think it takes an incredible amount of humility, an incredible amount of guts to do that. And so here in the Art of War, what it's saying is good decisions are just good. So make them, even if that comes at the cost of your own personal or professional career. Your job is to do the right thing. The other part talks about humility towards the end here, which I really think is important as we think about the character of people in our lives and leaders. He who advances without seeking fame, who retreats without escaping blame, he whose one aim is to protect his people and serve his Lord, this man is a jewel of the realm. Another way said, somebody who's moving forward but is humble, not looking for the fancy fame that comes along with it, and also when there's a situation that doesn't go so well that requires a retreat but is willing to take the blame for that. Take the accountability for that. And then, of course, their intentions are rooted in protecting their people. That leader is going to be around for a long time. That leader is just built the right way. It's got the right focus and mindset. A wise warrior, when he moves, is never confused. When he acts, is never at a loss. Know the enemy, know yourself, and victory is never in doubt. No heaven, no earth, and your victory is complete. If you're going to fight, know who you are. If you're going to step into the arena of business or entrepreneurship, if you're going to start a family, you're going to get married, you're going to build a relationship and a friendship with somebody, don't do it half-heartedly. Go all in. But the reason you can go all in should be because you know yourself. You know what is in bounds and what's out of bounds. You know what your boundaries are. You know what you stand for. You know your principles. Right, you can go into whatever relationship or engagement you have with confidence. And if you have that confidence and you know where you're headed and you know how you want the people around you to go out there and row that boat with you, then victory will be yours in the end. All right, y'all. That ends this part of the Art of War series. We have one more coming up on this next episode. For the meantime, that's all I got, and we'll see you on the high ground. Thanks for tuning in. We want to hear from you. So do me a solid. Leave us a review. We read every comment. If you got value from what you heard today, please subscribe, give us a thumbs up, share it with a friend. Thanks for being on the team. We'll see you on the high ground. JC out.